Welcome back to another marvelous Marvel episode of our Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. I'm Justin Morgan, and today we're talking about Ant-Man. Today I have with me James Reinhardt and Chuck Phillips.
Hey, welcome back, true believers.
I'm introducing this movie because Ant-Man is probably one of the best Marvel movies ever made.
I really came around to this movie. This is my second time watching it. When I saw it in theaters, like, I thought it was good, but I wasn't crazy about it. But the second time I rewatched it for this, I really, really enjoyed Ant-Man.
I think the whole concept, it kills me every time I watch Ant-Man, because I know this was Edgar Wright's project. I know they chose Ant-Man because we could do whatever we want with this shitty character. No one's going to care.
Yeah.
But what I'm thinking is, after watching this, because you can see the screenplay, you can tell that a lot of Edgar Wright's jokes are still in here, but it doesn't have the sharpness, like the wit in the camera movements and stuff that's a part of one of his movies.
Yeah.
And I felt like maybe the reason they got rid of him wasn't so much his story, but the technical, and how maybe it would really run the budget up to do the kind of stuff that Edgar Wright wanted to do.
Yeah.
This is one of the scripts that Joss Whedon read. I know it's been changed, but it was, he said that the best script that he's read for any of the Marvel movies was Ant-Man, and that it's not the Ant-Man that got produced that anybody saw. So I'd like to read that eventually.
Yeah, I'd love to as well. And I know for Edgar Wright's departure, there's been lots of rumor and speculation, but never really anything concrete. I mean, we can infer a lot that it definitely seemed like him and Disney and Marvel had a very different vision. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's weird because coming off of getting through something like Guardians of the Galaxy, where James Gunn seems to have had a lot of free will with what he wanted to do with these characters and to do whatever he wanted with them. So where the fuck were they butting heads so much between Edgar Wright and Disney that they would not let him? Like, they literally were like, we're going to let Edgar Wright go. Yes. Edgar Wright's films, who everybody mostly enjoys. Like, it's, people line up to see his movies now. Mm-hmm. Baby Driver was one of the few movies I can think of people going to see because they fucking knew it was an Edgar Wright movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird one because, yeah, like we said, before they had James Gunn, and since then, seems like they let James Gunn do whatever with Volume 2. It seems like they let Ryan Coogler, you know, make his own type of movie with Black Panther, with Taika Waititi, however you pronounce his name. They very much let him do whatever the fuck, so...
Maybe after the backlash from Whedon, and Edgar Wright really didn't say anything. He was very, like, it's mutual. Maybe after what Joss Whedon said, post-Ultron, post, like, Ant-Man, around this time that we're talking about currently, maybe they sort of, like, we have to trust in the directors a little bit. We can't have this backlash that we're a big corporation that won't let these voices speak, which is the whole point of a director.
Yeah, because you have Alan Taylor, who very publicly spat with Marvel in Thor the Dark World. Then you got Whedon and Edgar Wright. Yeah, maybe they did decide to let
him. I'll also say Alan Taylor is probably not a great director.
Yeah, and like his... I know, like, one thing, problem he had is he didn't like that James Gunn shot the post-credit scene for Thor the Dark World. That, like, he's very vocal about that. And for me, I'm like, well, it's a fucking Marvel thing. Like, what do you expect, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Ant-Man is pretty much the whole cast is who Edgar Wright wanted. Mm-hmm. There's not anybody that came in after the fact.
There's a few that I think left because I know Patrick Wilson was cast by Edgar Wright, but after Edgar Wright left, Ant-Man's filming got delayed.
Which character would he be? Was he the Yellow Jacket? Because Paul Rudd was on. Well,
yeah, Paul Rudd was on. I heard multiple. At first, I heard Patrick Wilson was supposed to play the cop character, Bobby Cannavale's.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I heard. Then I heard a rumor that he was going to play young Hank Pym in flashbacks. Mm. Then I heard that he was going to play the villain who wasn't Yellow Jacket in Edgar Wright's draft. But for whatever reason, after Edgar Wright left, obviously filming got pushed back, and Patrick Wilson had to leave because of schedule. I think him and a couple other, like, smaller actors had to leave because of scheduling issues.
I mean, you could tell that this movie was meant to be, if everyone has, every Marvel movie has that subgenre, this one was supposed to be the carefree comedy. Like, mm-hmm. that's what they were going for. Yeah, we heard it described as the heist film, which we're getting, they're like already forgot about it because Infinity War is the heist, a heist film, because we haven't done one of those before. They already forgot about Ant-Man, which has maybe one of the best casts too. Like, my mind is blown by everybody's, first of all, I don't know how the fuck Michael Douglas got in this movie. I actually really like him. He might be my favorite character in this entire movie. Evangeline Lilly, haven't really seen her since Lost, and she holds her ground. I think, what's the guy's name?
Michael Peña?
No, sorry, well, I know he's your favorite.
He's my favorite
character. Yeah, he's my favorite character.
Well, you get him, you get T.I., which is weird.
I know a guy you're talking about. The other guy that's hanging out with him? Like the weird looking dude?
That's what I was going to say. I was going to jump right to the only cast member who seems fucking odd, and Chuck brought this up right before we recorded, was Corey Stoll's character.
Oh, yeah.
He's a really sharp, competent actor in almost everything he's in. Mm-hmm. And in this, he plays the flattest, most one-dimensional villain of all time. Yes. And I'm like, he is such a good actor. Even when I was saying, what's his name? I meant Avon Barksdale because I can't. Avon Barksdale from The Wire. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. I forgot he was in the movie too.
It's such a small role.
Mm-hmm. You got old Stark played by Roger Sterling again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That Silver Fox.
Yeah, there's parts. Yeah, that's what we were talking about before. Is that I think Yellowjacket is probably the worst villain out of any Marvel movie so far. I would
still put him ahead of something like Thor the Dark World, because I don't even know what the fuck the villain was.
Yeah, slightly ahead. But I was telling him, when you first meet him, he already seems evil. Like, from the first time you meet him, he's like, fuck you, Hank. I'm taking over this company and I'm going to make everything better.
He has shiny suits. Like, you can't trust that guy.
And then halfway through the movie, they're like, oh yeah, if you don't wear my special helmet, the shrink rays will fuck with your mind. And Justin pointed out, he's like, but I don't think he shrunk yet until the end of the movie when he actually shrinks. He's like, Lily's like, the particles affecting your mind. And I'm like, but he did.
Yeah, they point out that his brain's been affected by the particles and he has not shrunk at all.
Yeah, I was wondering about
Is it from his head being so close to all the farm animals?
I was wondering about that too.
That zapper he uses.
Because I even read that about this, that the intent of his character is supposed to be that he's been experimenting with the PIM particles. And they've driven him insane.
But the way it affects him would be as if Hank Pym shrunk down and, like, gave radiation poisoning to the people around them.
Yeah. I think, like, part of me really feels like that was something that was cut or something that was in a draft of the script.
Yeah, that got, like, lost somewhere.
Yeah, because I feel like there is a scene where he experiments on himself and shrinks himself without putting on the helmet, and it drives him crazy.
But
seems like something that should happen.
Failed shrink attempts are terrifying. First, he has a cute little sheep that he turns into a fucking blob that's dead.
That dude.
And then he murders a guy in a bathroom. Like, he knows the tech doesn't work, and he turns him into a booger, too, or whatever the hell it is.
That's one of my favorite, that is one of my favorite lines. I thought we were using rats. Rats, sheep, what's the difference? the sheep is much cuter than the rat, I'm sure.
But yeah, Yellowjacket, like, there's that scene at the end when he appears in Scott's daughter's bedroom, and on paper, that scene should be terrifying. Like, he's a guy in his weird suit, and he's just staring at her. Like, that villain should come off really intimidating, but, like, I'm not really that scared of the character. Yeah.
Well, they also do this thing earlier with Scott Lang, who's played by Paul Rudd. You find out that he's a good character. He's a good guy that he burgles for good reasons, and he just wants to see his daughter, which he does say kind of like an asshole-ish thing where he didn't realize, like, how important she was until he didn't have her, which was kind of an asshole thing. But when he shows up at her birthday party, he has this ugly little rabbit monster stuffed animal, and she loves it because it's so ugly, and she laughs at it, which comes into play later when there's this ant that gets, it's dog sized, mm-hmm. and she's not afraid of it. And I don't imagine she would be that afraid of Yellowjacket either, because she's a tough little girl.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I just feel like that scene tonally was meant to be terrifying, but because we have no reason to really be scared of the Yellowjacket. The Yellowjacket character never does anything to make us worry about him.
No.
But yeah.
He's really shown that he can do, like, anything all that different from Ant-Man, except he has...
guns.
Lasers.
Yeah, lasers.
He's the same character as Ant-Man, but with lasers.
Yeah.
He does have his titanium suit, but they don't really explain that till like, the heat of the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They wait.
He has to go subatomic.
Oh, yeah. You go subatomic, you will lose your wife.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Or you just shrink forever and you're in a realm that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of terrifying. I mean, it's the concept of the incredible shrinking man. Yeah. You will shrink into nothing where nobody can see you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That concept is super terrifying. This kind of goes the way of, like, kind of funny Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And maybe the best ant pets since Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Mm-hmm. That is one of the most endearing things about this movie, at least to me, for the character Scott Lang, is the character of Hank Pym just seems to see the ants as tools, but Scott Lang seems to generally care about... he treats them like dogs, like he pets them.
Even gives the one a name.
Well, there's that line where...
there's too many, they have numbers.
That's 257. Or is it 258? Yeah. No, it's 257. Yeah. I number them. Yeah, but, I mean, older... Hank Pym, the original Ant-Man that, is it... he's still with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the beginning, but he realizes how dangerous his tech is, and he doesn't want it in the hands of anybody else.
Yeah, he doesn't want to give it to the Starks.
Yeah, he doesn't want to give it to the Starks. They fucking hate the Starks.
Everybody does.
Yeah. That Silver Fox, he's the ones who punch him in the face.
Yeah, I really want to see him and Tony Stark meet each other at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And well, they do have that fun scene where they have him rob from a Stark warehouse that ends up being the Avengers' actual new facility. Yeah. Post.
Whoa, where? What did this look like on the map?
Yeah, I do just like where they're like abort, abort, and he's like, nah, I'm in this too much. And then you get one of the funnier scenes with Falcon.
Yeah, that scene cracks me up every time. Just like them trying to have that massive fight, and then it, just the way it ends, and he's just like, it is very important. Captain does not find out about this.
Oh, I also like, too, where he's like, I don't think he can see me. And he's like, I can see you. Yeah, that's actually... it's a kind of a funny, clever fight scene, too. Because none of these fight scenes are remotely serious. They're all kind of funny.
They are, but this might have some of my favorite fight scenes in any Marvel movie, because they're all so fun, they're all so imaginative. Like, there's a fight scene inside a briefcase. Like, it is just such a world.
I'm gonna disintegrate you.
Disintegration by The Cure, and just like looks like a laser light concert falling through the sky.
Yeah, there's that. There's like that scene where they're fighting in like his little girl's train set.
Yeah,
which like all of them like.
And it's in the trailer too, but where they cut to that far away shot where it just looks pathetically falls off the.
But it looks so epic when they're tiny and he's, like, throwing cars at them and blowing them up.
And, like, you could tell, like, they had a lot of fun coming up with this, like, how can we make, like, these scene, like, these normal things be, like, that's ridiculous.
And that's part of what I was, me and Justin were discussing before we recorded this earlier. I said that I think is, like, the problem with the movie is that you have scenes like that are so clever and you're like, wow, that's really interesting. And then I was like, but there's, like, a whole, like, 20 minutes of training montage that's not even remotely done cleverly. It's just really, it's really boring of like, these are the, they give like the Latin name of the ants, so like they're good at building things. And then it's just, I said they even reuse the same gag like multiple times of him exploding out of the
they're also they're explaining like, oh, the ants that was mid terrifying. Explaining the heist, like it's he's getting an introduction to the ants as he's learning what the heist is going to be. I also love the sponsorship from Baskin Robbins, because the thing with his like his boss is so funny where he's like, Baskin Robbins always finds out.
And then he goes back to the apartment. What happened? I got fired from Baskin Robbins. And T.I.'s like, Baskin Robbins always finds out.
And that kid that, like, I've seen him in some comedies and stuff where he's like trying to order something hot. You could tell that was going to be more like a Scott Pilgrim jokey thing that kind of came off real lazy.
We're an ice cream place, buddy. Well, just anything hot. Yeah, 31 flavors
off
ice
the
cream.
Record, you can have that smoothie if you want.
That is a rumor I heard about this movie. So that's one of the reasons why Edgar Wright left was I guess Disney had this product placement deal with Baskin-Robbins, and they wanted that scene in where Scott gets a job working there, and I guess Edgar Wright didn't
want that. It's kind of funny, but not really worth... Could have been cut very easily.
Yeah, I think so, but I think, you know, obviously product placement, they had to put it in.
His introduction's cool, too, where he's, like, in this fight, getting punched in the face, and your initial thought is, like, Paul Rudd's not a tough guy, this is hard to believe, and then you realize that they're, like, kind of buddies, and this is, like, the getting out initiation. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're in a very friendly Disney prison where you just get punched like Indiana Jones and laugh it off like it's nothing. Yeah. You get some backstory on Michael Pena's character with his van. All his family got deported and he's lost his job, but they got the van. Yeah, and
Michael Pena, he's just perfect in this movie. Yeah. Like he's the best. He works so well as being, he's basically like kind of supposed to be the audience character, like a little bit getting like things explained to him, and it's like just his reactions.
You think he's the audience? I thought Paul Rudd would be the audience. Pena like the comic relief. Like I love his little stories where he poorly tells them and he mounts all the characters from their perspectives. That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I also like where they're trying to get him in, get him into like another heist, and they're like, "Okay, we got this one thing for you," and he gets all pumped up when he realizes that Scott's in.
Yeah.
Because Scott works out on like a index card that he can't. He's gonna be a while before he can afford child support or something. Like he had to do that. He seems like a smart guy to have to math that out, but you know that was for the audience. I do like when he jumps over that wall and T.I. is like, damn! Like, he's like the most athletic, random character. Also, Paul Rudd's hair looks fantastic post Baskin-Robbins hat. Come on, Disney. We know that he didn't fluff
He's just a perfect guy.
He's a paragon.
Have some little, like I said, the plant and payoff with the creepy monster thing. I also like the random... party people beneath them
constant disco going on 24/7.
Yeah, you knew that was going to come back into play. I never was worried about him being stepped on because of how strong he is. I never thought he would get killed if he got stepped on. I did like watching him swing around a turntable.
Yeah, that whole sequence is really cool, like when he's in the bathtub, which all of a sudden seems like this like endless desert almost, and then gets flushed, and not flushed, but he goes down a drain and all that fun stuff.
I like all the fun things like becoming the wrong size. I don't know why that became funny. Or they would do things where like, you know, like he fell in that guy's car and it dinged the car and the guy's like, what the fuck? And then like he appears. Then that guy never gets out of his car for that.
Yeah.
I like how ugly the Ant-Man suit is. It's like one of the laziest looking suits.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you take the character, like, a lot less serious with that weird-ass suit. But...
it looks better than it does in the comics, still.
I was in love with the idea of Edgar Wright doing it when I first, like, looked up Ant-Man. I'm like, this character is so stupid that this definitely has to be made into a thing.
Yeah, like, him and Wasp were always just, like, supporting characters in Avengers comics. They never really... I mean, I think they did... way back when, they had their own comics, but for the most part, they don't really carry their own titles.
Was Wasp always... well, never mind. I think I kind of answered the wrong question. I was going to ask, was Wasp always Hank Pym's daughter? But I imagine original Wasp would have just been his wife, whatever her name was. Janet
Van Dyne and Hank Pym were Ant-Man and Wasp for the longest time. And I always thought it was weird that, like, Edgar Wright was doing fucking Ant-Man. I'm like, of all the characters, like, basically just supporting characters.
It's a little... I kind of like the transition, too, of instead of, like, how they did Green Lantern and they went with one over the other, that this was kind of like they decided to make Ant-Man an existing character that's a handoff to the new Ant-Man.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I liked that a lot, and, I was reading a lot that had to do with the character of Hank Pym had gone through several iterations in the comics, including at one point he was an abusive boyfriend to Wasp.
There was one where he was, like, alcoholic.
Yeah.
It's like he's an alcoholic that shrinks and grows. Like, this is going to be a clusterfuck.
Marvel Comics have not always had the greatest track record of their marital relationships.
Yeah.
I've seen a bunch of the original Fantastic Four, where it's basically always, Sue, get the fuck in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You're not on the team. You're not as important as the rest of us.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
They showed a lot of that where it's like, and Sue's like, you're right. I'm not as important as my brother and Ben and everybody. And it's like, damn it, Marvel.
Yeah, and like, I think the comics, they did, he was abusive, but he was being driven crazy by something. Then he got fixed, but then,
that's probably what the whole helmet thing was.
Yeah, yeah. And then, when the early 2000s, when Marvel came out of their Ultimate line of comics, which is an attempt to make, like, a new, like, modern...
The redo.
Yeah, and, like, Hank Pym, everyone in the Ultimates was their version of the Avengers. Every character was incredibly unlikable, and Hank Pym was definitely, like, the peak of that. And,
probably because at the time, did it come out way before this movie?
It did, yeah. The whole thing of the Ultimate Comics is after X-Men was a big hit, then, you know, Spider-Man was in production. Marvel really wanted to capitalize on
it. I remember that's when Ultimate Spider-Man started.
Yeah, so they came out with the Ultimate Comics as a way of trying to pull in these new fans that were seeing these movies, and it worked for a time.
They probably never thought that Hank Pym would have a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was probably the idea behind it, was he's such a small character, no pun intended, that he's not coming back.
Yeah.
So they'll make him more like an asshole character that you, like, the boss that you hate, not necessarily, well, I don't know him well enough, but my guess is he's like an asshole person that you can help get behind other characters because of.
Pretty much. Like, in the Ultimate Comics, he was kind of like the asshole that thought he was smarter than everyone. And there was like a love triangle between him, Wasp, and Captain America that was kind of...
But
like,
mainly between him and Captain America?
The Ultimate Comics I stopped reading because, like, every character's... Like, even Captain America is such an asshole in those comics that you couldn't really get behind him. But yeah, I remember that was part of it, was like Wasp was kind of into Captain America and Hank Pym was jealous of that. But yeah, and then, but I know that's why they wanted, in this, that's why they had him as the mentor character. Because in the comics, in the regular Marvel comics, not the Ultimates, Scott Lang steals the Ant-Man suit because his daughter's sick and he steals medicine for her. And Hank Pym finds out and lets him keep it. Granted that he, you know, do heroic things with it. And this obviously changes it a bit, where Hank seeks him out to train him. And the character, from what I understand, the character of Hope Van Dyne, his daughter, I think in a comic she's more of a villain. But obviously it's changed.
I kind of like how he's a puppet master in this, Hank Pym, a little bit. Where he follows Hank, or he follows Scott's career a little bit, because he was a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that his crew is stupid. So he can plant this idea to... You know, there's a big safe in an old guy's house, and they're gone for the week.
Yeah.
To go in and try to rob this place. He did bank on the fact that he was going to try to maybe not be able to lead a good life. Like, he would have to go back to being a thief. So, I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit of an asshole on Michael Douglas's part.
Yeah, no, Hank Pym is kind of an asshole in this.
I know a lot of people... I remember a lot of people complaining originally because... people were mad because with the last one, Age of Ultron, because Hank Pym created Ultron in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So people were like, well, what the fuck's he going to be doing in Ant-Man now? If he didn't create Ultron, what's his point?
Mm-hmm. And I know that was part of it was Edgar Wright. He had requested that Ant-Man not be in any movie before Ant-Man. Because I guess they did want to introduce him in Wasp in an Avengers film. But I know Edgar Wright didn't want this to have any connections to any Marvel movie. Besides, you know, in name only. Which I think is also part of the reason why maybe... He left.
Maybe they wanted to force that like Falcon scene, and he might not have.
Yeah,
might not have been a fan of that.
I don't know, because I know I read that when the new director.
Yeah, maybe he hates Anthony Mackie.
When I read that Peyton Reed came on as director,
nobody can.
Him and Paul Rudd. I heard that they're really big fans of the Falcon and of Anthony Mackie's performance, so that's why they wanted that scene in this movie.
Well, everyone has like these weird contracts where they're in like multiple movies, and it's like, what movie can we get them to cameo in?
Yeah.
So they're like, Anthony Mackie hasn't used up his cameos yet, so we'd like to use one of those for Ant-Man.
Yeah, I know that's what they said. They're like, they're real tricky with that, because they're like, well, if we want Captain America in this movie, but it's in his contract that he can only be in like 9 movies total. We don't want to burn a movie on.
Well, they even said, like, Mark Ruffalo said that his, like, 2-second scene at the end of Iron Man 3 counts as one of his movies.
Yeah, I know, because I read
it. It counts as a full movie, so...
Yeah, Chris Evans said that his cameo in Thor The Dark World counted as a movie. So, then he has a cameo in Spider-Man as well.
Yeah, I was about to say, does that count as a full...
I'm sure that does, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm assuming you recorded a lot of takes of those.
A lot of those, yeah.
Those little PSAs.
What did you think of Stanley's cameo as the bartender?
I love it. I love the way they do it, because it's at the... I mean, it's at the end of the movie when you're like, oh, was Stanley not in this movie? Mm-hmm. But I think it's funny because of the way that Michael Pena narrates all of his stories. So the way... Watching Stanley's mouth move to Michael Pena's words. See that stupid fine girl over there? Stupid fine.
And then what was our behind-the-credits scene was that we saw that Evangeline Lilly has access to an upgraded version of the Wasp suit.
Mm. Which I guess, to James's point, looks way cooler than his Ant-Man suit.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, that Wasp suit looks awesome.
Mm. And the original Wasp suit looked just like the Ant-Man suit.
Yeah, it looked like a copy of it.
So that was cool. And then we had a tease for Civil War.
Yeah. That's when they had
Bucky in a brace. And
yeah,
I remember.
And that's when he's like, Anthony Mackie's like, I know a guy.
Which we would find out a year later was just a scene from Civil War. Because I remember a lot of people were really confused.
Well, that happens too with Captain America doing the punching bag. That ends up being a straight up scene in Avengers.
Yeah, which I wonder
if that's a way. Do you think that's a way of them getting around counting one of his scenes
as a
film being like, it's just a reused scene from a completely different film. You didn't film a new thing for
this
movie.
I think they could probably get around it.
That's what
being
I was
that.
Thinking. Maybe that's why they've done that so often, is to get them in there.
They have to be confident that it makes it in, because if it doesn't and it's a new scene, it probably counts.
Yeah,
because I remember when it came out, a lot of people were really confused about it. Like, because that scene really is any context. It's just like, there's Cap and Falcon, and they got Bucky in a vice. And,
yeah, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, and they mentioned, like, the Accords, which we find out as the Sokovia Accords. And you're like, what is, and then it ends. But I kind of had a feeling. I'm like, I feel like this might have been a scene from Civil War that we saw. And then we saw, you know, almost a year later, it was.
And Civil War, like, that's our next episode. You end up finding out is way more, it's closer to Avengers than it is Captain America. That has more of that ensemble.
It does, yeah, but Cap's, I guess we could get into it more when we get into it, but I think it's very much Cap movie because he's the one driving the movie.
He's the one with the biggest arc, so yeah. He's definitely the main character. Iron Man's definitely set up as the villain. But when you get to this big fight scene, you have a bunch of moments for characters that... You have big moments for characters like Spider-Man and Black Panther and Ant-Man. Like, all the weird big moments that really don't have anything to do with Captain America or Iron Man at that moment.
You do. Also, this movie, I didn't realize this movie has the first reference to Spider-Man in an MCU movie.
Oh yeah, and that great, that
we
great.
Got, we got guys that, what does all it say? Like, we got guys that fly, guys that swing,
guys that crawl walls.
Yeah,
and then he's like, I'm looking for a guy that shrinks. That is, it's funnier when it cuts back to the guy that's looking for Ant-Man is Falcon. Yeah. Like, he's on his own private mission to find Ant-Man.
Yeah. Just love the way he goes back through. Are you trying to tell me that guy told that stupid mad fine girl to tell that guy that he was looking for Ant-Man? And he said, yeah.
Yeah, the yes is like a really weird ending, to the point that you're like, you're trying to follow. It's just like this weird yes cut, and you're like,
that's the end.
Yeah, that's the end of the movie.
I'm interested to see the next Ant-Man and Wasp. I feel like, I'm hoping it's just more cohesive, because it's the same director, but this time he's at least had, I think, more time to work on it himself, whereas last time it was basically, here, we have all these pieces, now put them together for us in 2 months or however.
Another female villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Michelle Pfeiffer is playing Janet Van Dyne in this one.
Yep.
So, probably flashbacks.
There's a lot of that. And just from the commercial, it looks like there's going to be a lot more of those clever moments that are in this.
There's a huge Pez dispenser.
Yeah, they throw the Pez dispenser in and enlarge it, which I think with the one we didn't even talk about in this one that's my favorite is you keep seeing the keys with the keychain. And, like, the first time you're just like, oh, those are his keys. And then I think the second time was when I was like, Oh, that tank's definitely going to do something. Yeah, showing it.
Why would it be a tank? It's like the weird... Mm-hmm. The guy does not like the military at all. Military, why would he have a tank keychain?
That's my favorite part. This isn't a keychain.
So then who's your MVP? Michael Peña? I think the one with the best arc, character-wise, for me, is Michael Douglas's character. Because he kind of goes through this phase of realizing, like... He goes through what Tony Stark should have went through in the first movie.
Yeah.
And he also seems to be the one trying to do the most to amend things from the past. He's trying to help out Scott Lang. He's has this weird, strange relationship with, like, his daughter because he was kind of like an asshole. But script-wise, he kind of has to be an asshole because it wouldn't be that cool if she already knew what happened to her mom.
Yeah. Well, he's trying to protect her, so he has reasons. But I'd say he has... He's kind of the emotional center of the movie, more than even Scott is with, like, his daughter.
Yeah, like, earlier I thought Scott... I don't think Scott changes much. He's, like, a good... He's a good guy in the beginning of the movie.
He's always kind of, like, a happy-go-lucky, like, I'll keep going.
Right. He's got some moments of melancholy where he's a little depressed, where he's... You know, can't see his daughter and stuff. But then he does have that line, too, where I said earlier, where he just did kind of was like, I realized after not having my daughter for years or whatever that she's important to me.
Yeah.
And the daughter's, like, 4, so when the fuck did he... How old was she when he went to prison? So, that'd be my pick, would be Hank Pym.
Michael Peña is Luis for me. He's my MVP.
The Battle of the Michaels. I have to say...
That was a really short explanation. there was no explanation.
He's great.
He makes me laugh.
He steals the movie. He's hilarious.
I think he's the one that you come away with. Kind of like how you said, like, you forgot... You even mentioned, like, oh, I forgot how, like, important Michael Douglas is. So I think I like Michael Douglas, but I would agree. I do think Michael Peña is the thing that you always remember about this movie, just overall. Maybe not MVP... Story-wise, but MVP just...
Character-wise. I think of it, when I think about this movie, okay, I didn't remember Michael Douglas was in it. I didn't remember Bobby Cannavan or whatever his name was in it. Avon Barksdale. I probably wouldn't have remembered Evangeline Lilly if I didn't know that Ant-Man and the Wasp was coming out and she was the Wasp. Paul Rudd, I don't think I'd forget Paul Rudd. I already forgot Corey Stoll's character.
You always remember T.I.
I do always remember T.I. for some reason, for having, like, only a couple funny lines. He has that line about where they open the van. He's like, no, there's this guy that looked just like me.
Yeah.
I also love Avon Barksdale's line about, like, that's one ugly-looking dog, or whatever he says about that ant.
The way he says it when it, like, crawls past him, he's like, that's one messed-up-looking dog.
Yeah, that's his, like, one moment, besides his weird moment where he, instead of immediately looking over what would be a strangely dressed Paul Rudd in a jail cell, like...
Yeah, he walks, like, halfway past before he...
He has to, like, drink his coffee like he's, like, in heaven, and then look over, like, all surprised. So, I think Ant-Man is a decent movie for being, like, we don't really care... Edgar Wright, I would have loved to see what his version of the movie would be. Maybe I'll see if we can find a script, maybe in our final episode, if there's kind of where we want to tie things together, I could talk about it a little bit more. Yeah. Have time to read it, maybe.
To my knowledge, it hasn't made its way online, but who knows?
Or you're reading a really fake script that somebody took the time to write, because those people exist.
Those people do exist, yeah.
We're gonna fool these guys.
Somebody thinks that they're going to be like, actually, it's Jeremy Paramount. Actually, I wrote that script. Hire me.
A friend of mine tried to convince me to do that for, like, a Resident Evil script. He's like, we should write a Resident Evil script together. I'm like, why? It's someone else's intellectual property. He's like, yeah, well, if we write it and release it online, you know, if enough people like it, it'll get attention to us. And, you know, maybe someone will hire us. I'm like, that never, ever works. Because people have tried it.
I also feel like that's definitely banking on your career of... The Resident Evil franchise is on the rise, and if we can get in on that one while it's riding high, it's like, no, that film series has been going down for quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that. Another friend, like, pitched me, like, writing a
Would you put script. Your name on it?
No.
Because that would be hard to, like, everyone be like, that was me, that was me.
Yeah, I think, like, he wanted us to put our names on it, and we'd, like, release it online. And then when the studio took notice, we'd be like, look at how good our script is. And that idea never fucking works. Because people, like, I remember someone did. Like,
a lot of people don't want to read it, because I remember one time I wrote this thing to Sega as a kid that was like, you should make this story. And I sent it to them. And they sent me back, like, some crap, like toys or something. And they're like, thanks for writing that. However, we can't read it because we can't be influenced by anybody else's ideas. Yeah. So, like, my idea was, like, never read, but.
Yeah.
I was thankfully a kid. It'd be funny as a full-on adult to be like, thank you for being interested in this kid's thing.
Yeah, and, like, it gets me because, like, I know... Because people do that, or they'll make their fan films with that intent of, like, you know, a studio seeing it and producing it or whatever. And my thing is, like, if you have enough money to make these... And these fan films, some of them are really, really well done. Yeah. They look good.
Some of the Star Trek ones.
Yeah, they look great. You know, that one that had that big, like, lawsuit not that long ago.
Yeah.
But, like, I've seen, like...
Oh, that one.
I don't remember the name of it.
I just remember them trying to release it. I don't know if they were trying to release it in theaters or just, like, on demand or something, but...
They were trying to make
CBS,
money.
Like, shut them down, like...
Yeah.
Real quickly.
Because they were trying to make money off of it.
Yeah.
And, like... But there's that, and there's been some really well-done, like, Batman fan films.
That's why I think fan films are stupid.
Yeah.
You can't get a career off of it.
No.
You can't get... Yeah, you don't have the property. You can't make money off of it. So if people want to show it, you're out. That's whatever money you put into it.
Yeah, and that's what I don't get about it is, you know, if you're making it for the love, like if you don't really care about advancing your career, if you just want to make this just for because you love these characters, fine. But I know a lot of people do hope to advance their career by it. And I'm thinking if you raise enough money to make this fan film that looks as good as it looks, why not tell your own story? There's so many indie filmmakers.
Or be influenced by it and be like, make it different enough that you're like, I'm not stealing that idea.
Yeah, yeah, or like homage it or some way. But I know so many...
Like, this clearly would have been Batman, but since I can't legally do Batman, we'll just say it was not Batman.
It's someone else, yeah. And I know so many like indie filmmakers that would love to have these budgets to make their own stories. And, you know, we got these fans that somehow got a couple $100,000 to make a fan film that looks fucking great.
Yeah, I remember those... What were those ones they did? They did the Punisher one. Did they do a Spider-Man one? What was that other one?
Oh, they did those Punisher shorts. Yeah, yeah.
Those were like a few years ago. And that was when Punisher, I think, was...
Remember all the Street Fighter ones that they were doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those looked really good. I think that's the guy that is doing a Counterpart.
It might be. I know those are different because I think those are still somewhat licensed.
Yeah,
those are from Machinima on YouTube. They did the Mortal Kombat ones too, which also, they look great. They're better than...
They're all, like, 2-3 minute film shorts.
Yeah, like, 5 to 10 minute shorts that they did on YouTube, and then they just released them on Blu-ray. But I think they were fan films, but I think they did still have, like, they had the clearances for them somewhere.
Yeah, I think they had the rights,
like, they basically were like, we're not going to make that much money, we're just posting them to YouTube, and Capcom's like, all right, you can do that then.
Any final thoughts on Ant-Man? That's good. We've covered it all.
Dead silence.
Yeah, like I said, I really enjoyed this movie much more in a second viewing. I think when I saw it first time, you know, I was going in with really low expectations because I'm not a big fan of the Ant-Man character, and like I knew Edgar Wright was going to make it and left it. I'm like, oh, whatever. Like I saw it out of more brand loyalty than anything.
I'm kind of glad you did because I remember a couple months ago we were talking about Ant-Man. And you're like, I just didn't like it. Didn't stand up as well as the other Marvel movies. And I was like, I don't think that was the point. I think the point was, it wasn't supposed to be any. It wasn't supposed to hold up to any of those expectations.
Yeah.
And then I think probably now you watch it again, you realize like, yeah, it is kind of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like a franchise ruining joke. It's sort of like, all right, it exists and it's not that bad.
Like I said, I think it's really fun. And I'm, like I said, I liked a lot more the second viewing. And I think it's a very solid Marvel entry.
It almost feels like they were trying to do with this what they ended up doing, like with something like Rogue One, where it's like, it's its own little thing and it's only kind of barely going to connect to the overall Star Wars story. It's with characters that you don't really know or care about. It just barely connects, but... I don't know. I'd be interested to see Edgar Wright do a Marvel movie, I guess, at some point, but I don't think he won't
probably touch it again. Because he wasted a good, like, 2 years of his career He even said with, like, Baby Driver and stuff, like, it was backed up because of the whole Marvel thing.
Yeah.
No, or I guess it was War... The World's End would have started
soon. Yeah.
I don't know if he said he didn't... He hasn't even seen Ant-Man yet. And he probably...
He's and he sees everything, so he's a director scorned.
Yeah, I know. That's what he basically said. It's like, you know, he's like, I don't... I forget what his exact words were, but he said it would be hard to watch someone else finish.
Do you think he could be like Joss Whedon and be like, well, fuck you, Marvel, I'll go to DC. DC will let me do things.
I don't even, like...
He probably just won't deal with a big studio again.
Something like that.
Yeah, I would love to see him tackle, like, The Flash or something. Well, The Flash has a director. Yeah. But in an alternate universe, him do, like, The Flash or something, but I don't...
The Flash seems like...
He doesn't realize how lucky he is either. Like, he might have something that he's always wanted to do, but he's one of the few people that he could spin any idea off his head and people will be like, okay,
yeah,
we'll find a budget for you for that.
Yeah, I think he's one of those rare directors that can make whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, don't pull like an Abrams where you're just getting pulled into all these franchises. Like, stick it out and just keep... Don't turn into fucking Tim Burton now. Stay old school Tim Burton.
And that's the thing. Another thing I see online is lots of people like trying to place these directors with, like, him or other like more artistic directors with franchises. And I'm like, no. Like, sometimes, especially we see Edgar Wright and other directors that their sensibilities maybe don't like gel well with these franchises. So let them tell their own stories, because Edgar Wright's he is telling original stories, and I think we should let him do it. And let the guys that want to do franchises like Abrams or, you know, others do their thing.
I think that's our show.
That is our show.
We're on Twitter at Cinema Demore. I'm at JJMorgan19.
ChuckFinn66.
I'm at James Reinhardt.
We're on iTunes and Google Play. Please subscribe, rate, and review us. And James, let's get that beautiful
self-sealer.
Thank you.
See you guys next time.